Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
All right, it's the Disruption Zone. Everybody needs to calm down. Need to get some of that THC-infused toilet paper I just posted on my social media. At Leland Show on Twitter and Great Lelando on Instagram. It's the Disruption Zone. We're going to talk a little more coronavirus. Tomorrow, we're going to take a break from it completely. And I have a story about a guy who faced down a crocodile in Australia's outback. So we're just going to take a complete break from coronavirus tomorrow. And then on Wednesday, we've got episode 3, or I should say part 3 of Thomas Massey and the DC Swamp Monster. So it's going to be a big, big week for the Disruption Zone podcast. Today, we're going to talk to Dr. John Michaels. Dr. John Michaels is a pain specialist, but he's also a medical doctor, and he is all over this thing. And so we're going to chat with him about the coronavirus and where you should be going, what you should be doing. Oh, by the way, did you see that story about the Tennessee brothers who bought up all the hand sanitizer in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and parts of Kentucky and rural areas? They were driving around to like dollar stores buying all the hand sanitizer, and then poor people weren't able to get a hold of this stuff. They bought 18,000 bottles. They loaded up like a U-Haul type truck with 18,000 bottles of hand sanitizer from Kentucky and Tennessee. Then they tried to sell it at like quadruple, 100-tuple, like the prices. Like some of these things were going, what would have been 99 cents or whatever, were going. He was selling them for anywhere from $8 to $80. It's just insane. And basically Amazon shut him down. It was kind of a cool capitalism self-regulating situation. Amazon and eBay were like, y'all can't do that. They shut him down. And then they shut down anybody that was gouging people with prices. I would have had no problem with this if they had bought a bunch of it and sold it at like a small markup. But they were cleaning out stores. Like there's nothing wrong with selling some stuff in a time when people need stuff, you know, getting it to people that can't get to it or whatever and making a little bit of a buck off of it. But what they were doing was clearly gouging. It wasn't capitalism. It was irresponsible and it was jackwagon territory. Anyway, it turns out that the brothers now have given their stash to a church that will spread 2/3 of it throughout rural Tennessee, and then the Tennessee Attorney General seized 1/3 of it and gave it to Kentucky to distribute around Kentucky because that's about how much of it had been taken from our state. I thought it was interesting. One of the brothers said it was, quote, never mind to Fox News reporting on this. It was never my intention to keep necessary medical supplies out of the hands of people who need them. That's not who I am as a person, and all I've been told for the last 48 hours is how much of that person I am. He's apparently been getting death threats and hate mail, and he expressed remorse for his actions. Quote, I've been buying and selling things for 10 years now. There's been hot product after hot product, but the thing is, there's always another one left on the shelf, he said in an interview with the New York Times. When we did this trip, I had no idea that these stores wouldn't be able to get replenished. He hoarded, but in the end, he did the right thing. So thank goodness for that. But I love how capitalism worked. I know the attorney general and law enforcement got involved, but not until after Amazon shut him down. Amazon was like, dude, you can't do that. So in this case, maybe government and private sector worked together to make it work. But this was capitalism governing itself, which I thought was pretty cool. Let me just lay out a little bit of where I'm thinking. I had somebody on here on my social media. I said, hey, you know, maybe we do need to shut everything down or most everything down for a couple of weeks. When I look at the curve on this virus, every source that I've seen has shown that if we practice this social distancing thing, it would flatten the curve. Now, it's kind of a give and take thing, right? Like, I'm just trying to be honest with you. You're going to have a longer duration, but a fewer number of people at any one time getting this virus, which means fewer people will die because more people can be treated. But if we have this high curve, this high bell curve, this huge spike in cases, then we get what happened in Italy. And what happened in Italy is it was such a high spike that they literally have to ration healthcare now because so many people are sick that there's people that need respirators can't get it. And so they're looking at people coming into the, if you are like, say, 80 years old and you need a, you have two or three other underlying health conditions, they're like, you're out. We're not giving you the respirator. We're going to give it to somebody who has a better. So that's rationing healthcare. So we're getting a good look at where Bernie Sanders wants our healthcare system to go by this. So there's silver linings in all of this. But here's the mistake I think that Italy made. And again, I'm not an expert and I am not a doctor. And I want to just make one caveat to this. It is very clear that this is a changing, dynamic, fluid situation. So I'm very aware that this is a podcast, which means that you may listen to it in a week. You may listen to it in a month. And by the time you listen to it, it could be completely outdated, and I may have a completely different point of view. Honest, smart people will change their opinion of things as new facts come to light. Stubborn, stupid people will maintain an ignorant opinion despite new facts coming to light. Have some of my views about this thing changed since more information has come to light? Yes. For instance, I am on board with this social distancing thing. I've looked at what the scientists are saying, and it makes sense. Now, I still believe people are freaking out way too much about this, okay? We're about to go through a tough time here in America. That's a given. This is going to be a rough time. There's going to be economic devastation. Can we deal with it? Yes. And I'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute before we get to our guest. But to make it clear, there are points of view that I've had that have evolved over the course of this because new facts have come to light. And I still think most people are freaking out way too much. If you're young and healthy, if you're under 40 or under 50 and you're healthy, you're probably going to be just fine. But something occurred to me when I was talking about that the other day, that a lot of America, in fact, most of America, is not healthy. So there's this issue of not being healthy and not having strong immune systems, which makes us a little more susceptible to stuff like this. In addition to that, elderly people are extraordinarily vulnerable. And one of the things that we're learning about this virus is that a lot of people, if you're young and healthy, you could have it and not know it and pass it to someone else who is vulnerable. This is why it's so important. If you could literally be like, I feel fine, I'm going out. Okay. What if you have it and you run into somebody who's immunocompromised? They get it and they die, right? I mean, that's the thing to think about. So the idea of social distancing, what does that mean? Does that mean we should shut everything down? The idea of even a national shutdown, does it mean everything should be closed? No. First of all, I think any national shutdown, and it's being talked about. I don't know if it's going to happen or not. And again, if you're listening to this in a month, it may be completely irrelevant. But it is being talked about. How should that work? In my opinion, as of right now, I believe a national shutdown should look like this. All entertainment venues where lots of people gather should be closed. Leave your grocery stores, your pharmacies, your gas stations, some small retail stores open. Like, you may not open the mall, so to speak, but you might open a strip mall where people can go in and out of a small retail store. I think the restaurant closure, like, for instance, Governor Beshear closed all the restaurants and bars in Kentucky. And I thought this was interesting. He came out like the day before yesterday. He was like, too many of you guys are going to the bars, and if you don't stop, I'm going to have to close them. And then the next day, he comes out and he closes them. I'm like, really? One day, you gave everybody you gave 24 hours to adjust to the new social distancing cycle. Here would have been a better way to handle that, from my perspective. A better way to handle that would have been to say, bars and restaurants, limit your capacity to 50 people. The CDC is recommending that gatherings of over 50 people not happen. So that last week, it was 250. Before that, it was 500, okay? So it's going down, and it's narrowing. But let's limit it to 50 people, okay? Because we have to think about a couple of things here. We have to balance the economy and the economic devastation that could be wrought from this with the need to save lives. And because the economy is a key part of people's lives. I mean, there will be a rash of suicides after this virus takes effect and goes away because there will be people that will lose their entire economic lives. And that's terrible and that's devastating and it's a horrible thought. And we want to be careful that we balance. You know, the economy is just as important to our lives as our health in some ways. And certainly what is most important to our health in the long term is that we have an economy that's strong enough that we still have a healthcare system that can take care of us, right? So there's a balance that has to take place here. So a national shutdown, in my opinion, would look like this. Restaurants, please limit your capacity to less than 50 people. So we can keep some people employed. We can still have a place to go out and eat if we're out of food. I mean, with people hoarding food, maybe you got to go through, you know, drive-thrus definitely stay open. Maybe if a fast food restaurant wants to keep their drive-thru open and just let them choose. But let's recommend that we keep it at under 50 people And for the most part, people stay home. And then and then all of your open spaces, your parks, your hiking trails, those things should stay open. People should be able to get outside and experience outside. Why? Because science tells us that we do better against viruses in the open air. I think one of the mistakes that Italy made was they said, hey, everybody go home, stay home. You have to have an ID card to leave the house unless you need groceries or a doctor's visit. You can't leave the house. And now they've even ratcheted that up and said in South Korea, and they've said if you get, it will be a triple the fine and you could go to jail for a year, right? So I think the mistake that Italy made in that case was that they quarantined everybody at home with each other. So you had young, healthy people that had the disease, didn't know the disease, were staying at home with grandma. And grandma got the disease and then she got sick, right? Okay, so there was no place for them to go to be away from each other. And so you quarantine sick people and healthy people together. Well, guess what? The healthy people got sick, right? So that's one of the problems. This is just me. And again, I'm not a CDC official. I'm just saying, looking at it from the outside, looking in, I'm like, if you tell everybody to stay home all the time, you have to be able to leave the house. Now, do you have to be able to leave the house to go to the NCAA tournament? Devastated as I am that that's not happening, not necessarily. Do you have to be able to leave the house to go to a concert where you're rubbing elbows and shoulders with everybody? No, not necessarily. Do you have to be able to leave the house to go to the mall and where you cough and spit on each other? Not necessarily. But you do have to be able to leave the house. Maybe to go grab a meal and come back. Maybe to go walk outside and around your neighborhood. Maybe to go for a hike up in the hills. Whatever. You have to be able to do that. It's crucial to health. So I think there's a balancing act that needs to happen here. Now, let's back up again. We're going to bring our guest on in just a second. I think everybody just needs to take a deep breath and calm down. If we end up with a two-week national shutdown where it's described, if it's the way that I described it, where you can still get out, you can still go to a restaurant that just has a limited amount of seating, you can still go out and pick up food and bring it back, you can still go to the grocery store and the pharmacy, you can still go to the gas station, you can still go for a long drive, get out of the house. You can still go for a hike, but otherwise everything's pretty much closed for a couple of weeks to flatten this curve. It would give us a chance to reconnect with our families. I'm going to say something here that has nothing to do with the coronavirus and everything to do with it at the same time. When I go out into the wilderness, I feel like I'm closer to God. And the reason, and what's interesting is the farther I get away from human capacity, the farther I get away, in other words, the fewer bars I have on my cell phone, there's an exponential rise in what I feel and my level of closeness to God. The technological wall that we have built as humans, and especially as Americans in a consumer-based society, the technological and consumer-based wall that we have built between us and God makes us feel invincible and as if we don't need Him. And in some cases, as if we don't need our families. And you can disagree with me about that, but just look at the situation, right? So many problems in our society today stem, in my opinion, directly from the fact that families aren't staying together and there isn't a level of commitment there that's important. And this technological wall that we've built is what makes us feel invincible. What we're seeing now could be one of the greatest things that ever happened to us here in the United States. America has felt like we were blessed among nations. We have had it so easy. It has, in my entire lifetime, I have never seen an empty shelf at a grocery store until now. This is the first time that I have gone to a grocery store and it looks like a third world country. I have never experienced that before, except when I actually did live in areas that were devastated in that way. That is something that could be a gift on the other side of this. Take a minute to take a deep breath. Connect with your family. Recognize how weak as humans we really are. When all of our consumer stuff and our Instagram-worthy photo places where we go out and we look so cute in our yoga pants, hanging out with all our friends at the big concert, when all of that stuff gets taken away, when all of that stuff gets stripped down, what's left of us and who are we? When there isn't an Instagram filter to show the best side of us, living our quote-unquote best life, what really are we? A friend of mine posted a meme on social media in which he said, people don't rise to the occasion. When a crisis hits, people default to their highest level of character. Meaning, when something like this happens, we're stripped down to the people that we really are. Who are you? Who am I? Who are we? Who are we in relation to God? Do we recognize that we're nothing without Him? Do we recognize how thin the wall is, how thin this wall, that this fake sense of security, this fake sense of invincibility, do we realize how thin that veil is between that total devastation, total poverty, total destruction? Do we realize how vulnerable we are to the elements? Could you go out in the wilderness and survive for 2 weeks and get away from all of this? You know, the zombie apocalypse. Most people can't. So this could be the greatest gift. If we can get through this, and I think we will, I'm very optimistic that this is not the zombie apocalypse. I'm very optimistic. This is if you really look at it, I saw a number this morning. It was like 156,000 people been infected worldwide. 5,000 of them died. And I kind of like just shook my head and went, wow, 5,600 people brought this nation to its knees and the whole world to its knees. But I understand what's going on here. They don't want it to become, it's 5,600 now. They don't want it to be 56 million, right? And it very well could end up being that. I don't think it will. I think we're going to come out and come through this. But when we have challenges that come to us, we have to say, what can I make of this challenge? What positivity can I derive from this? What growth can I get from this? So as for me and my house, we're going to be looking at it that way. What is our character? What do we need to work on? Who are we as people? What is our relationship with God? Do we understand that He is in control and all that matters? Do we understand that His will is all that matters? Do we understand that sometimes He is all that stands between the earth and its full destruction? Do we understand what precipice we're standing on? I hope this doesn't feel too religious to you. It's not what I'm trying to do. But as a person of faith, I have to express that element of who I am. And this is what I'm seeing coming through with all of this. And it worries me that, well, I just want people to see that there could be a possible gift in this, that if we could be humbled, what's that scripture? If my people will humble themselves and pray, I'll hear them come to their defense. That's where I think America needs to be right now. So if you know somebody that's in need and you have a little extra share, check on your neighbors, be in a community, be a member of that community, get on your knees and pray, and let's do smart things. And we're going to come through this. I really feel strongly about that. Now, let's get to our guest. I want to get an update on this. Dr. John Michaels. He's a pain specialist. I had somebody say, well, he's a pain specialist. What does he know about this? He's a medical doctor. He studied all of this stuff. Sees patients every day. And he's very in the wheel on this. So we're going to talk to him and get an update on what his feelings are about this, what you should look out for, how dangerous is this disease, this virus, et cetera. All right, Dr. John Michaels with us on the phone. Dr. John Michaels, I was funny. I had somebody go, well, he's a pain specialist. That means he doesn't know anything about the coronavirus. I'm like, he's a medical doctor. I think you're qualified.
I'm qualified. I would never pretend to be one of the experts like, you know, the infectious disease doctors. So I do have limitations in my knowledge. But yes, as part of my medical training and as part of, you know, working in the medical community, we are responsible for being on the first line of helping inform people to be safe and to make appropriate decisions with their health.
Well, and not only that, but if things get bad, which we hope they don't, and I think we maybe are making some good decisions right now that will keep us from getting to the point that Italy's at, but you would be called upon because all hands on deck right now. And just real quick, I'm going to take a pause and say thanks to all those, the doctors and the nurses. I don't know if you've seen what's coming out of Seattle, but these people are actually compromising their own immune systems by not getting any sleep and working around people that are sick and making themselves far more susceptible to this because they're trying to help people and keep people alive. That's a pretty powerful form of heroism there, if you ask me.
I agree. It really is. And our thoughts and prayers definitely go out to them and their families because people are every day putting their lives on the line to take care of people who've acquired this and as well as other diseases. You know, we're the first line of defense. And that's why in this time, it's so important that we each take responsibility for our health and do what we can, not only to protect each other, but protect those first line defenders in the hospitals who are fighting tirelessly to save our lives.
Let me go through some of the questions that people are probably asking out there that come along the lines of what's the difference, okay? So, like, what convinced me to sort of not necessarily self-quarantine, but definitely do the social distancing or whatever that buzzword is, was the fact that as a relatively young, healthy person, I could have this and not know it and therefore give it to someone who is especially vulnerable. And that made me stop and think. But I also have heard a lot of people say, well, what's the difference between that and the flu? Vulnerable people die from the flu. So why do we not social distance, you know, when the flu is out? And why do we not shut the country down every flu season? Let's kind of speak to that a little bit, the difference between these two viruses.
I think that this is shown to be a bit more contagious than the flu is. It's spread a little bit more rapidly. And I think still the uncertainty as far as its course. We've been dealing with the flu for years and years and years. We know the course of the flu. We know when it comes on. We know when it typically goes away. We know about how many people are going to be sick, how many people are going to be hospitalized, and how many people are going to die from it. This is a whole new entity. We just have a lot of uncertainty about how fast it will spread, how long it's going to hang around, and how many people are going to die. It is shown to be a bit more deadly than the flu by several multitudes, perhaps not as high as some of the reports are out there, but still most reports show that it is quite a bit more deadly than the flu, and especially for more vulnerable populations. Like you said, people above 70 years old who have underlying heart or hypertension issues or diabetes or other health issues that put them at more risk. So the uncertainty is why we're taking more precaution.
Right.
Again, most people, and this is what we talked about the last time when we discussed this virus, is that most people are not going to have symptoms, or the symptoms are going to be very mild. So the danger becomes you may be carrying it and you may not know. Mm-hmm. And it's not you that we're worried about. It's your grandmother.
Right.
It's these other people out in the community whom you could be spreading it to and putting their lives on the line because you don't know you have this virus.
Right. And that's the thing is that you and I also talked about, because there's a lot of panic about this. And I think the panic is overrated. I mean, there's too much of it. I think the wise decisions, steady decisions, social distancing, you know, during the course of this is all very prudent. But I don't think panicking and buying all the toilet paper is a good idea, because it's just most people are not really going to be affected by this. The vast majority of Americans, even if they get it, are not really going to be affected by this in any way other than economically because of all that's going on with the reactions to it.
And the responsibility that we have is to just be smart with our resources. Like you said, most people are not going to develop illness from it, but what we have to do is practice this social distancing and practice good hygiene habits.
Yeah.
Wash your hands regularly. And if you don't have the ability to wash your hands, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer. Don't touch your face, your eyes, your mouth, your nose, your ears. And make sure that you are taking just general hygiene precautions to prevent the spread of this disease. Because what we want to prevent is this massive spike where now you've infected people who are more likely to become seriously ill. And what you'll end up doing is overtaxing the ability of our medical resources to handle those kind of spikes. And then you're putting the medical community at risk, and you're also causing a situation where medical professionals are going to have to choose who to treat and who not to treat because right. much needed resources have been completely taxed.
I think that's the thing that convinced me about the social distancing ultimately, because at first I was like, what are we talking about here? Come on, most people are going to be fine. But then it was the realization that even though most people are going to be fine, this is more effective than the flu in terms of infecting people, and it's more deadly than the flu to those elderly people. And if we have a huge spike in that bell curve, it will overwhelm the health system, which then will cause other people to die unrelated to the illness. If you have a heart attack, but you can't get into the ER because there's a bunch of people in there on respirators because they can't breathe because of this disease, you're going to die, you know, or you're going to get subpar care as a result of that. So flattening that curve allows us to keep the capacity, keep things under that capacity at the medical centers, and thus, in the end, saves lives, which is a good thing.
Definitely. And what people just need to focus on is what they can control and not what they can't control.
Right.
Like you said, panic and fear are not helping anybody. And in fact, if anything, having increased stress and anxiety is weakening your immune system.
Right.
And we all need strong immune systems in the midst of a pandemic like this. So taking the ability to relax and focus on, like we said, the social distancing, avoid going out into large crowds. And, you know, we see people posting on social media hanging out in bars with lots of people. It's
Right.
not a good idea right now, even though the young people, like we said, are less likely to have any severe consequences from this. They still can affect others who will have severe consequences. So our job to be socially responsible, but not to panic, not to be fearful. You don't need to stock up on 200 rolls of toilet paper. It is nothing protective about toilet paper. It's going to save your life. Let's make sure everybody has enough to go around. The memes online are just killing me. In fact, you posted one on your social media page about the THC infused toilet paper.
Calm your ass down.
it made me laugh this morning. I laughed out loud about it this morning because you're exactly right. Everyone just needs to calm down and be responsible with their own actions.
Yeah.
Just take their own precautions and let's keep that bell curve low so that we can appropriately take care of those who really need the critical medical help. And this too shall pass. Like well, we said before,
my wife had a hilarious capitalistic idea last night when she said, you know, they're shutting down restaurants in a lot of states, except for the drive-throughs. She goes, they ought to serve up a drive-through special where for an extra $10 you get your fast food meal and a roll of toilet paper. Just add it in there, be like, everybody be lined up at that place. So speaking of fast food, let's talk about the role of diet in this. There's been some people making claims on Twitter and social media that the keto diet will protect you from this. It won't. But you and I have talked about this, that the low-carb way of eating, and I want to explain this to people and why this matters, because I've posted a few things about this, and some people scratch their heads. The low-carb way of eating doesn't protect you or cure the coronavirus, but it does protect your immune system. It makes your immune system stronger, which in turn leads to better protections against this virus, or a better chance that you'll stay well, or a better chance that if you do get it, it won't be as bothersome to you as it is to some other people. Let's drill down into why that is.
When you're eating a high carb, high sugar diet, you're creating a systemic inflammatory response in your body. And inflammation decreases our ability to fight off all sorts of different infections and disease processes. So in order to minimize the risk of acquiring severe forms of this disease, like you said, it does not make you immune to getting the coronavirus, but what it can do is minimize the effects that the coronavirus has on your system because you have a strong immune system if you're able to minimize how much inflammation is going on in your body. So to eat good, healthy foods, to start to take care of yourself in the way of protecting what you're putting into your body and enabling your body to function in its top form is going to help you weather infectious outbreaks like this, because you are going to be stronger, your immune system is going to be stronger, and you're going to be better to fight off things like the coronavirus.
Do you think that the American population is actually more vulnerable to this virus because of the standard American diet, which is worse than even Europeans? Because I noticed the other day when I went to the store, of course, you know, my wife and I are, I guess you could call us preppers. I don't know. We're not crazy, but we try to keep 2 to 4 weeks of food supply on hand just in case something happens. And one of the things I noticed the other day when I went in to just get some items, I had most of everything I needed, but I went in to get some items, was that all the stuff that I eat, the paleo diet, was all available. There was plenty of fresh meat. There was plenty of fresh organic vegetables. In fact, the vegetable aisle, just the organic, sat like an island in an empty sea. And I thought, you know, there wasn't a Totino's frozen pizza to be found in the store. I went and looked. I was like, there's no frozen pizza. There's no pasta. Are we more susceptible to stuff like this ravaging our society because we're already so inflamed?
We know that obesity and diabetes run rampant in our society right now, and large portion because of how we eat and the types of foods that we're consuming. And so that does put us at a greater risk, as we've seen the CDC report that diabetes is one of those increased risk factors for adverse outcomes with the coronavirus. Obesity obviously is going to create a pro-inflammatory state in the body where it's going to make it harder for us to fight off disease. And so our diet's playing a huge role in that. Now, part of why you go to the grocery store and you're finding all of the preservative foods gone off the shelves is because people can store them away for months and months and months. You know,
right.
What, Twinkie has a half-life of 10,000 years or something like that. It's like,
I can put that in my pocket and eat it a week later.
They talk about what the two things that will survive nuclear holocaust are cockroaches and Twinkies. So, obviously these foods with high in preservatives and artificial flavors and sugars are going to last on your shelf for a long time. So those go first because people feel like, oh, I can store these forever. But then think about what you're doing to your body. And like you said, if people were being more logical and going to the grocery store and buying the food that they need, the fresh organic foods, the grass-fed meats, the things that are available, they're going to protect their immune systems. They're going to actually bolster their immune systems and have a better chance of fighting this off.
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just saying, again, people just need to stop panicking.
Right.
We don't need to store food away. There's been a series of false text messages going out that the government is going to make this mass quarantine and we're not going to be allowed to leave the houses. And it's all a hoax. It's all false. People should not believe that information. In no way, shape, or form have they said up to this point that everyone's going to be quarantined. So we don't have to hoard months and months of food and live in a bomb shelter. We can continue with our lives as relatively normal as possible while avoiding large crowds and obviously social distancing and practicing the normal hygiene standards we should practice anyway by washing our hands and eliminating how much the things that we're touching. But we don't have to have this widespread panic where we've got to store away months of a time of food.
Well, what you bring up is kind of interesting is what you're talking about. We can sort of quarantine off or protect that the majority of the economy that way by living our lives mostly as normal. Obviously there's going to be big, you know, repercussions to the entertainment industry, which will roll throughout the rest of the economy. But the government is taking steps. You know, you and I mentioned earlier when we were conversing off the air that, you know, they've lowered interest rates to zero, which under normal economic circumstances, as a libertarian leaning conservative, I would be dead set against. But the idea here is in a time of emergency to make it a little easier for regular people to live their lives, to make their mortgage payment, to keep their jobs. And so in this kind of situation, those things are happening. So if we could just, you know, pay attention to these basic things. And you're right about the, you know, there's discussion of a national shutdown, which is totally different than a national quarantine. And I think that we should make that very clear. A national shutdown is not going to be much different than what we're seeing right now. And that is that maybe nationally you wouldn't be able to go sit down at a restaurant, which I have feelings about that anyway. I think there's better ways to handle that than that. But at least in terms, it wouldn't be much different than right now. There is no discussion of a national quarantine where everybody has to stay in their house and a soldier will keep you there. It's just not going to happen in America.
No, it's not. And so people can put those fears to rest. And one of the things that we can encourage is still can continue to support your local businesses, support your local restaurants. Most restaurants now are having takeout or delivery services available to people. And you're going to continue to support your local economy by continuing to do those things. So while it may not be recommended to sit down in a crowded restaurant full of, you know, multiple people who could potentially be carrying this virus, you can still support that business by continuing to order food from them and having it either delivered or having one of these food services deliver. And there are even companies like Favor and Uber Eats are now upping their ability to support small businesses. I think it was Favor had announced that they're eliminating $100 million in fees to the restaurants themselves to help support those small businesses. So, and the drivers will come and they'll leave it at your doorstep. You don't even have to open the door for the driver. So it's a good way to be able to support your local economy. You know, entertainment industry, Netflix, and the ability to stream movies, we're going to still be able to support those industries. Yep. Most of us now have been hanging out on the weekends and catching up on all these television shows or movies that we haven't watched.
And
we're just doing it in a different fashion through the streaming. And so I think we're going to find a way to be able to support our economy, even in the midst of some of these temporary changes that we have to partake in order to, like we said, soften the curve of this infection.
I like your sense of optimism about this. And I think more people need to recognize that, that we can get through this. And there's just, the interesting thing is, and I said this the other day on a radio station in Houston, we live in a double-edged sword digital age, right? Like on one hand, it makes it so much easier to spread panic. You mentioned the texts. I was getting emails the other day And it was funny. I said, wow, oh, there must be like 100 people that have the exact same friend at the CDC. This there was this supposed self-test you could give yourself to see if you have the coronavirus. And I posted on social media. I was like, guys, if the CDC has a test to get to tell whether or not you have that, they're not sharing with the broader public, but they're sharing with these secret 100 friends on Facebook. It's probably a hoax, right? So it's like easier to spread that panic. And I bet there's a lot of people doing this breathing test every morning. Okay, I don't have. You know, and I'm like, stop it. But on the other hand, as you pointed out, there's ways to communicate. There's ways to get business done. All of that. We can telecommute now. You mentioned being able to order any supply we need and never have to actually come in contact with a person. If you do have the disease, you're not stuck. You know, it's really a beautiful thing that we live in this age where we can sort of find a way around these things. Real quickly, on the back to the issue of the disease itself or the virus itself, what symptoms really should people be looking for?
The big symptoms that we're looking for are fever, temperature greater than 101. Want to pay close attention to that. Upper respiratory tract infection, sore throat, cough in your chest, burning in your chest, difficulty breathing. These are the more concerning symptoms for the coronavirus. Most people are going to present with symptoms of just the common cold, sniffles, maybe a little bit of a cough. They may not have the fever. So if you are sick in any way, shape, or form, we ask you to please avoid contact with people.
Right.
Self-quarantine yourself if you're feeling slightly off or slightly ill, and just assume you have it. I know they're working diligently right now to get drive-through testing centers set up, and it's never a bad idea, once we have the resources in place to be able to do that, to go out and get tested if you have even the slightest question, am I infected? Because the biggest thing, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Yeah, sure.
If we can know and we can prevent having people get really sick who, as we've discussed earlier, are at the highest risk of getting really sick from this, then we can turn all this panic into, you know, a much ado about nothing.
And as you said last time we talked, the vast majority of people who are going to get this, have this currently, or have already had this, don't even know it, which means
correct,
those death rates are probably a lot lower overall. They're still higher than the flu because the same situation occurs with the flu. But there's still, but there is, you know, this is not the zombie apocalypse. The vast majority of people won't even report it because they won't even know that they have it.
That's 100% correct.
Yeah.
Most people are going to have a very mild case of this, either thinking, oh, I had a little case of the flu, or a lot of people may just feel like they had a little cold and a little cough and it went away.
Right.
And the vast likelihood is that it was probably this coronavirus. And I think we're seeing that. I think, you know, it was really the nursing home in Washington that brought a lot of the alarm because so many of those people died.
But, right.
That it was likely here well before that. And people just were not aware because the symptoms were so mild.
Yeah.
And so once testing becomes more ubiquitous across the states, I think we'll see that a lot of people ended up having this. And like we said, most cases were mild. But we want to, again, take every precaution against spreading this and keeping that bell curve low so that we are protecting ourselves, so we're protecting our medical workers on the front line and protecting our society as a whole.
All right. So when I get done with this, I'm going to go hiking. Something you recommend?
Amen. Okay. Please go outdoors, bike, hike, exercise, swim. That's something else that is going to boost your immune system. Just, again, maintain that social distancing. I wouldn't go hiking with a large group of people.
Right,
just
right.
Go enjoy nature. Continue to live life as much as possible with as much normalcy while respecting the basic rules that the CDC have put out there.
Right.
And if we can do that, and if we take good care of our own health, take responsibility for our own health by washing our hands, not touching our faces, using hand sanitizer, eating better, it doesn't take a whole lot to change our diet and to start to boost our own immune systems to protect ourselves. And if we can do those things, like we said, this too shall pass,
Right.
and we'll all get through it.
And as I said, those foods, those good foods, are available. So,
They
if
are.
you're looking to stock up, those are available. So,
They definitely are. And if you're worried about the increased cost of those foods, well, a respiratory and a respirator in an ICU is extraordinarily expensive. So
that's true.
taking those precautions now, and spending a little bit more to protect your health is well worth the investment.
Totally agree. Dr. John Michaels, thanks for your time. It's always good talking to you. Stay safe, stay healthy. Thanks for what you do.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, again, tomorrow we'll talk to a guy who faced down a crocodile in the Australian bush, the outback. We're not going to talk about coronavirus tomorrow unless there's like some sort of an update I'll give you. But for the most part, that's going to be a non-coronavirus episode. And then on Wednesday, we've got our next part three of the D.C. Swamp Monster with Congressman Thomas Massey. So it's a big week here on the Disruption Zone. Thanks to my co-host, Cameron Mills. He'll join us later in the week as well. We're going to talk about manhood. And all of that. But thanks to my co-host and co-executive producer, Cameron Mills, as well as Dynamics Productions, Dynamics Audio, dxaudio.com in Lexington, Kentucky, for all your production needs, from just refurbishing old VHS tapes onto a new digital format from your family that you can watch those old home movies, to a major Hollywood production. He can get it done for you. It's dxaudio.com if you want to know more. We thank them for their help with the production. Again, you can get us just about anywhere podcasts are found. We're on Spreaker now, which is great. We're hoping to soon be on some bigger formats than that. We're on Apple Podcasts. Subscription is free, as well as Google Play. The best way you can help me is to share this podcast. Get as many people listening as possible. It will spread the word, and it will grow our voice. So do that. We're also on Instagram at Greatly Londo and at The Disruption Zone, and on Twitter at Leland Show and at Zone Disruption. Thanks for listening to The Disruption Zone. I'm Leland Conway.
Go.